Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
How you holding up? It's WWDC week, but we're almost at the end now.
I'm so tired. There's a lot of stuff.
There's a lot of stuff. I mean, and again, like we said last week, it's good, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But also, it's a lot.
Well, it's tricky, especially in WWDC times, right? Because there's the stuff that Apple comes out on Monday and it talks about, like, these are the big new features. And, you know, there's been a lot of debate, especially this week, I think even more than previous years, about, like, user-facing features versus developer stuff. This is a developers conference, and, you know, people who are developers sometimes are like, well, why aren't you talking about more developer stuff? But it's also a very public user conference and probably Apple's biggest user-facing event of the year, even if it's also the biggest developer-facing event. So it's a balance they try to maintain, but it also means when we're going through all of our, you know, watching sessions and stuff, we have to winnow through the stuff that's like, all right, most users aren't going to care about this because this is super nuts and bolts, right? Like, they don't care about new, you know, methods and classes and stuff added to things because they don't know what that means. But some people are really into that. And obviously for those people, you just go watch the sessions. We're not going to tell you what's important because we don't know what you care about.
Right. And there's videos and videos and videos, and even as we've found, as you and Stephen Hackett and I have been patrolling the WWDC video library this week, there are videos in there that really get you a sense, like the regular developer conference experience. There are those sessions where you're like, oh, this allowed me to glean something, and then they go into code, and you're like, bye.
Yeah. Check it out.
Which is harder to do in person. It's easier to do if it's just a window. You close it.
Oh, I always used to leave.
I did too. But then in the last few years, it was so busy that if you didn't get in right at the beginning, you couldn't get into a session.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was always the classic, as I would surf from session to session. And once the code came out, I was out of there. But there are also those sessions where you're just like, nope. Right? Like, this is all for developers. And my point there is that there's a lot of stuff that we look at and they're like, no, there's nothing for us to glean there. Those are sessions for developers, right? So most of the content of this conference is developer content. It's just that, you know, the keynote is too big a platform. Everybody's going to pay attention to it regardless. So, you know, Apple can use it as a first way to announce their new OS cycle. And for those of people like us, we can glean some technical detail at a high level from some of the sessions. But mostly, you know, mostly it's for the developers, and that's how it should be. And honestly, that's how it's always been, other than the attention from the masses. Like, I will say, back in the early days of me going to WWDC back in San Jose before they moved it to San Francisco, like, nobody paid attention to the keynote except the developers and the other people who are really into the Apple ecosystem. But that's not true anymore. That rapidly changed when Apple became popular, and that, I think, changed the tenor of that keynote.
There's also a difference in the fact that because the videos are available to everybody, and they're available to everybody at the same time, right? It's not like, oh, there was a session and there will be a video like a day later or a week later or a month later or something. Everybody's watching the same things at the same time. And because it's basically public now in a way that it didn't used to be, right? I mean, a lot of the stuff that used to be covered, if it was just a session or whatever, it wasn't always stuff that you could or would talk about publicly. I was thinking about this in regards to, like, the beta stuff, right? Like, I remember when it changed, when we used to be like, well, we can't talk about any of the beta stuff unless other people are talking about the beta stuff. And then at some point, Apple relaxed the rules, and now it's just a free-for-all, right? Like, download the beta, start talking about it, right? And it's like, I feel like I struggle adapting to that world just because it was ingrained, the whole, like... Yeah, I don't even have devices to put the betas on right now. So I am like, well, I'm learning a bunch of stuff about other people installing the beta. So there's stuff to glean there too.
Yeah, I think Apple finally made the wise decision that the truth is that once it's out there, everybody's going to talk about it. And the last thing you want to do is set some rules that mean that the only people who are talking about your new thing are people who are breaking the rules.
Right.
It's like, I only want the least trustworthy people to talk about my new announcement.
Right.
It's like, no,
well,
that's
it's good.
Not,
it's,
no,
it's great for them. It's great for them to have this much attention, right? Like, what other scenario is it where people get this hyped about a beta?
And I would argue, and I'm sure this has been argued internally at Apple, the truth is the general public doesn't follow this. They don't, because it's esoteric. I always used to say this at Macworld, I think, back in the day, which is until you can use it, nobody cares. Like, yeah. I mean, that's the sad truth is we get really hyped about it and we're like, oh, back in June, I mean, I've written this sentence a million times. Back in June, Apple unveiled this operating system with this feature and we are all really interested in it. And you know when I write that sentence? In September when they ship it, because most of the people reading those articles in September either have forgotten or never paid attention because it wasn't something that was coming to their device. The moment that right. it shows up on their device, they're like, oh, did you see there's this new thing? It's like, yeah, they told us about that in June. But people don't pay attention. So on another level, it's like it doesn't matter. It's like the people who are super into it are going to care now. And most people are not going to care. They're not going right. to care until September or October or November or December or January or whenever it goes on their device for the first time. Yeah. Lauren just got Big Sur yesterday. So big news. And she was on Mojave. So big news, everybody. Yeah. You know, let's get out those stories from 2019 and 2020 because she's got those features now, right? And so, like, people don't care until they can actually see.
I mean, unless it was an event that also announced hardware, right? Which is which didn't happen this
hardware,
year.
So that, but hardware, you can play, presumably, right. you could place a pre-order for.
Right, sure. Yeah, I'm just thinking, like, you know, I had my normal tech radio bit that I do on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
And they sent me the list in the morning. I'm like, there is literally nothing about Apple on this list. And WWC keynote was yesterday. And it's like, oh, that's right. Again, because nobody cares about those announcements because there was nothing that impacted them right now.
I did a radio hit on Tuesday. It was this, actually, as we're recording, I think he's just about to sign off. Stan Bunger, who's been on KCBS in San Francisco for 30 years, last week is this week, is the last day today. And he's a bit of a tech enthusiast. And so I've been on a bunch. And he got me on one more time to talk to Stan before he left. And we did talk about, like, new features and all that, but it was also a little more kind of, like, philosophical about, like, Apple security and privacy and are they trying some new stuff there and all of that. But again, I'm sitting there talking about this stuff thinking it's just not, like, most people aren't going to care until it could be on their phone, right?
It's not immediately relevant.
So that's why I think, yes, unless there's a hardware announcement or something like that, this is a set of developments that people, the general public cares a lot less about anyway. And that's fine, right? Like for those of us who are in it, it really is great to see Apple set the stage for its next year of software releases. But the broader general public who does not listen to the Six Colors podcast is not going to tune in really until there's a release.
So,
and then they'll get really angry about Safari.
Oh, yeah. So I had my, you know, I did on the rebound this week, I did my win, lose, draw list of like features. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, lose, I think, is a little strong, but it's kind of the like, I'm not feeling great about this, but maybe using it will change my mind. And the Safari redesign is definitely at the top of the list. And it seems like I watched the session this morning about designing for Safari 15. And I see what they're going for, and there are some stuff in there that I think is good, but I think that design is going to, it's going to need to be refined a little bit, and they have an uphill climb ahead of them to get people, because when that changes, right, like you just said, when that drops on people's devices, they're going to be very angry. It's because people don't like change.
I'm going to make a prediction, because you know, most stuff, although there are things in Apple betas that drift over the course of the summer, a lot of them don't.
Yep. We always think they will. We're well, it's a beta. They can change it. Right, and it's like a lot of times
they don't. And it turns out that's like maybe 20% of the time that actually 10% of the
sometimes
time.
Sometimes they do refine it down the road in a point release. That happens because like they'll come out and then when all the users are like, hey, this is terrible. And all the people who are using the betas are like, see?
So
then they sometimes walk it back.
I'm going to make a prediction, which is that I predict that Safari 15 will not ship in the fall as we see it today. I think this is going to be one of those things where there's going to be so much pushback. And again, you know, people don't like change. Literally any change is going to get pushback because there are people. There was a guy who might even be listening to this podcast in the Six Colors member Slack who was like, I don't know, you know, they're just going to drive a lot of people to Chrome. And then less than like 12 hours later, he said, well, I've switched to Chrome now. And I thought, well, you didn't give it any time, right? You didn't give it any time. And it's not your job to give it any time, right? But my point here is it's human nature. Like people resist change. the thing is, it doesn't necessarily mean it's good or bad. Yep. It means people don't want it to be different. However, that said, this is so different.
Yeah.
And there are so many details of it that when you start to pick it apart, they kind of unravel, that I kind of feel like either somebody invented this who thought that it was brilliant, and the people who thought it was a mistake weren't able to stop them, mm-hmm. or they all kind of like convinced themselves that this was going to be great, and now they're going to have to weather the storm of specific criticism, and they're going to realize that they, even if they like it holistically, there are going to be a whole bunch of details that reveal the flaws in the design. And right. we'll see how that goes. Just looking at that session.
Especially on the web, right, where there's like an infinite number of possible things you could run into.
That's one of the things that kills me about this. So like on the iPhone, they have, which if you've only really looked at it on an iPad or a Mac, the iPhone is the most extreme change of all.
The Apple's address biggest, bar at the bottom. Yeah.
Biggest platform. They've made the most extreme changes. They put the address bar at the bottom. There are a bunch of issues with this. I get what they're going at, which is that way it's sort of more reachable for your fingers and thumbs. Although I also scroll my web pages down there, and now there's a UI element in the way, which I'm not sure this is an improvement. But you start to unravel it, and it's things like, in that session, they talk about how you need to set these environment variables to determine the actual viewable workspace of the web page, so that you avoid the fact that at the bottom of your page now is a UI element covering your page. And I thought, I get this, and this is clever, but you're also literally asking every web designer to write in new code specifically to avoid Apple's UI decisions. Right. And
it's a weird tipping spectrum, right? Where like when the iPhone came out, there was a argument that like what was great about it was that it worked and it showed you the web, right? And like they're like, clearly what they did when they designed it was saying like, we want to make it as easy as possible for people to use this and not feel like they're getting a watered down experience. And there are mobile sites and all that stuff. But like, I think that was their goal. And it feels as though there is a tipping point where now they feel like our browser is so popular because our device is so popular and it's the default browser, that we can essentially try to say, we're going to make this change and all of you have to adapt. And that is a risky move, because if it backfires, I don't think that people are going to blame the websites, because I think most people won't get that, right? They'll look at it and say, there's this, you know, location bar over this button I want to press. What, Apple moved the location bar, therefore it is their fault. And, you know, it kind of is. Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to have to figure out whether or not they're prepared to deal with the influx of people posting screenshots on Twitter or whatever, right, saying like, look at this, this is so dumb.
I don't know. I don't know what's going on here. I don't know if they've thought about all these things, or if I would like to believe that anything that goes as far as the WWDC keynote has been thought through pretty much a lot, right? It's not like we just made this up, right? It goes through some thought. I want to give them the benefit of the doubt there. However, the first time you tap on that bar in order to go to enter in a new query or a new URL, there's this moment. So you tap on it on the iPhone, you tap on it, and now the keyboard slides out, right? So the thing you tapped on has now been flung halfway up your screen. So you got to go find it again if you're editing the contents of that box. Or you can start typing, but again, the place you're typing in has now moved. And it's terrible. Like, it's such a bad piece of interaction design to have the thing that you touch fly away from your hand because they put it at the bottom where the keyboard is. Now, I'm sure they'll say, well, you know, but the truth is, and they can come up with an explanation or not. But my immediate visceral reaction, which again, we fear change, I get it, is that's a mistake, right? Like, that is like, no. You, in order to get this sort of like very clever design, you have created a whole bunch of weird interaction problems. Is it worth it? And I don't know. Anyway, the tab bar collapse thing where it's now all one level, which I think we could have seen coming because Apple has been collapsing toolbars everywhere for the last few years. Mm-hmm. I find that weird. I could probably get used to it. The big problem I've got is that all the tabs are really narrow now, and I can't read the text in any of them.
Yeah. And they make that point, too. Like, oh, you should put your page name in front of your site name. I was like, I don't think that's going to help because most page names are longer than, like, 8 characters.
Two words that you can see in there because, of course, now all the tabs are narrower because they have to fit what browser Chrome remains along with the tabs. And as somebody who is not a person who has 90 tabs open at once, but has like four or five, they used to be readable, and now they're unreadable. And they're like, well, you rely on the favicon. It's like, well, I guess I have to, but that's more like resort to the favicon. I don't know.
Right. It made me sit there thinking, you know, like my personal website, like, oh man, I don't have a favicon on my personal website. I guess I need to make one now. Yeah. And it's like, that's not, it's outside of my skill set.
Yeah. Just take your that picture of you in the hat and just shrink it way down, 16 by 16.
That's right. You can get a lot of detail on that.
It'll be good. So yes, Safari people.
I
will
think that's on my lose list
that's the ticking time bomb. I just want to put out there as the nobody knows about it now, but in September and October everybody will be complaining about it on Twitter. That's what's going to happen.
I think the iPad multitasking is the other one that's on there because. And I talked about this a bit on the Rebound, but essentially my feeling is it feels a bit like a sunk cost. Like they're like, no, this is really the way we need to do. This is how we need to do multitasking on the iPad. And every time they're like, well, it's not quite right. And they keep investing more into trying to make it work.
Keep
and
digging.
It's like, guys, I don't think, I think you have dug yourself into a hole and you're just still going and not willing to say, maybe this is the wrong model. And maybe they'll get there. I don't know. But like, this is my bet. 2 years from now, we're going to be talking about another refinement of the multitasking system.
All right.
This doesn't fix everything. It may be better.
So I have my take is a little bit different. I think this is Apple resetting multitasking based on what they've learned the last few years with an eye toward what they're going to have to do going forward with larger displays. Because I still believe, yes, I do. I still believe that iPad external display support is going to come. At this point, I'm starting to think it's going to come whenever there's a monitor that Apple makes that's not a 6K HXDR whatever monstrosity. But if you look at the design, not only does it harken back to the Mac little control things, in the upper left corner,
which I always forget about.
But I mean, let's give him credit. It is a visible UI element that controls multitasking. When you tap on it, it clearly explains what you're going to do. It's grayed out if it's not the Focus app, which is like a huge complaint people have had for ages about like which app is
mildly, but yes.
But still, like it is a huge step forward.
Low bar.
But I also look at that and I think, and it's a draggable control. You can literally drag those things, you know, from left to right or whatever using that control. Mm-hmm. Okay. On one level, it seems like they're rearranging deck chairs, like you said, because it's like it's all the same stuff. It's just with a new controller for it.
I'm not saying it's not better. I'm just saying.
Right. So, but this is my point is, if you can envision a world where in some modes, there are multiple windows on the iPad, or tiles, or however you want to do it, I can see how they use this UI to get them there, right? Because they could put other options under the window controller, plus it's the drag area. So if you have a few floating windows, you touch that thing and you drag it around, or you tap it and send something to full screen, or send it to split view. I feel like you could get from here to a more, I don't want to say Mac style, because I'm not saying it's just like the Mac, but a more Mac-like window mode, I can see how you get there from here. Whereas the old approach to multitasking, I could not, right? Like it doesn't make sense because you need some window controls essentially and a draggable area. And they've added that now. So to me, this feels like step one of a new process that will lead to more and different multitasking features on iPad rather than just kind of a lipstick on the pig situation, but that's just my
guess. I would
like
to have your confidence, but I do not feel it based on the past several years of the way they did this.
That's fair. You're right. They haven't earned it. I just sort of feel like with all the stuff that they're investing in that and all the M1 iPad functionality and all of that,
I
it
agree
seems
with
inevitable
you.
To me.
I think it's part of it is a resentment that comes from the fact that they didn't or were not able to do it this year.
Yeah.
Well, the movie's because so we had all kind of hyped ourselves up a bit about like, oh, yeah, multitasking, this will be the year. And they talked about it. And you're like, oh, multitasking. Oh, this is not what I thought it was
so
going to be.
So slow on the iPad, it seems sometimes. Because remember, they didn't do widgets last time. And honestly, right. Again, in the examples of change, but I got to live with it and maybe I'll understand what they're doing. But for all of our conversations about Apple rethinking the iPad home screen,
mm-hmm,
I can't, you know, and how among the things that I would complain about the iPad home screen is that it was just sort of a sad version of the iPhone home screen, but because the screen is bigger, they just spread the icons out. So how do they solve the metrics problem with all of the widgets on the iPad? And the answer is they just spread the icons out further.
So annoying.
And I mean, I'll grant you with App Library and other stuff like that, I'm coming to the opinion now that you kind of don't want apps on the screen.
Yeah, I think it's widgets and a dock, basically, is like,
yeah,
kind of feels like maybe the right approach. But
I've been using an iPad with iPadOS 15, and I have one screen, and it's kind of like my quick launch center for the apps that I'm launching all the time that aren't in the dock, and that's it. But like, it just seemed like, again, maybe what they're really migrating toward is this idea that you use App Library and that they want to de-emphasize the home screen because if you do a multi-window approach, you don't really have a home screen in the same way. Like, I'm gonna keep beating that drum. I want to believe, but it is. I don't know. It's just it's so disappointing in the short term because it feels like they're just, you know, I guess inflating. I was going to say deflating, but it's like they're inflating and everything spreads out. And it just, it seems so minimal effort, I guess.
Right. You know what my favorite announcement was in this? It was the, I laughed about this a little bit, but in the dock you have, I think App Library, it's in the dock.
Yeah.
And I was like, and it was like, oh, it pops up and you can find a list of all your applications. And I'm like, I have been putting my applications folder in the dock on my Mac for years. And I thought, you just reinvented it.
Yep.
We've literally had this. And it's a lot of little things like that where it's like, I know you don't want to turn to the Mac. And I'm not even arguing that you want to turn to the Mac. But what it seems to be the path that you end up taking.
Well, yeah, I mean,
when
this is,
you can't figure out what to do.
Yeah. Well, it's
like,
I think the story, I don't think that's it. I think the story is,
no, I Apple, don't think it's any, but it feels like,
well, no,
it.
Because it's the reverse. It's, I think Apple resisted doing anything that resembled the Mac on the iPad because no, this is different. We do things differently. And, but you look at it and you're like, but no, a list of apps makes sense. It's not a defeat for you to have a list of apps and let people find.
Sure.
And they're like, no,
it's
the Mac
great,
does that. I'm not going to be like the Mac. I'm like, you're not my real dad, Mac.
Well, the other funny thing that the other hilarious thing that I think came up was the, and they haven't showed this off super much, but there was a picture on their site, which is the, they revamped the keyboard shortcut interface.
Uh-huh.
And it's got,
it's all connected.
It's got menus.
I
know, but
it's a menu bar.
I know. It's literally
File,
the Mac
edit,
menu bar at the bottom.
View, window.
I laughed very hard when they listed those off during whatever session they showed up in. And I was like, wait a second.
Yeah.
Those sound familiar.
Yeah.
So and I guess maybe it's sort of, maybe the best way to explain this is that in some ways it feels like the iPad is a remix of the Mac. Or that's what it's moving towards. It's like, it's not the Mac, but it's like we should.
So,
again, like you said, you shouldn't resist taking good ideas just because they were from the Mac.
Right. I think that's exactly right, which is what the iPad started out as is a reinvention of everything and a repudiation of everything that happened in personal computers. And it was, we're going to take the iPhone and build on that to create this iPad. And it's going to be like nothing you've ever seen before. When, and this goes to my point about like them resisting things that are Mac-like for like the Files app for the longest time. And then they did iCloud Drive and they're like, nope, it's not Files. It's just iCloud Drive. I was like, guys, it's already a file browser. Just get, and they're like, all right, it's Files. It's Files. Leave me alone. It's Files. And now I think your take on it is exactly right, which is the way to view the iPad is, what if we invented a personal computer in the 21st century? So it is a remix. It is the idea of the Mac, but what's our take on it today? And some, you have to be willing to say sometimes that our take on it is that the Mac did a pretty good job of this. And other times you're like, no, that doesn't really fit in with our metaphor and the way we're working. And that's fine. But like, I definitely feel like there has been some resistance to like doing anything. It's like, yeah, we could do that. We could do that. They added in iPad OS 15, there's a progress window showing your file copies in the Files app. Why did that take so long to exist?
Right.
Why did it not exist before? Why were you afraid to show the state of a file copy that takes time? And I think the only answer is because it looked too much like the Mac and we don't want to be accused of reinventing the Finder. And it's like, you got to get over it, guys. You got a menu now. Like, I think they are getting over it. I think we're actually seeing them getting over it.
I think that's literally what this is.
Yep.
Yeah. It definitely has
next stop menu bar.
Yeah. I mean, you put that keyboard shortcut thing at the top and
it's a menu bar.
Basically there. So, yeah. I don't know that any of this has gotten me to the point where I think, as I said last week before WWDC, replacing my iPad is still not feeling like a high priority thing to me. Mm-mm. There's not a lot in here that tells me I need to go out and update my iPad because it's fine. Most of this stuff works on my old iPad. Not all of it. The universal control, I think, is not compatible with my old iPad Pro. Mm.
But you have a iPad Pro from 2018?
I have 2017.
Oh, you got the curvy one.
I've got the old style one. So that's like the only thing. And even that, I'm like, universal control is on my draw list of like, I don't know, maybe this is interesting. I got to use it and figure it out because it feels like engineering. Like we figured out that we could do this. And it's really clever, but I'm not sure if it's useful or not.
I laughed so much when that came up. And not because I think it's a bad feature, but because I had the moment of like, well, nobody had that on their bingo card, and who thought of this? And it's such a wild idea. But I've heard from a bunch of people who work with an iPad, and I was doing it in Arizona the other week, working with an iPad next to their Mac. And the idea of not having or two Macs. And the idea of basically not having to have a second set of keyboards and mice around. I've done that where I've had a laptop next to my iMac and I've had to like, I start typing on my iMac keyboard and I'm like, oh no, I need to be typing over there. Right. So like, I think it might be useful, but it does feel like sidecar. It feels a little like, it's clever, but are you really going to use this or not? And I don't know.
The moment to me that I keep laughing about is the moment where Craig grabs the file from the device all the way on the right and then drags it all the way over to the left, right? And he's got three devices. So it basically passes through that middle device.
Yeah.
And I find that hilarious because it's like, it's not doing anything there, right? Like it could, and that's why it needs to know.
Yes.
But it's hilarious to me that it's just like passing through and it's like, why did we do that? Because we can.
And it's basically like another version of AirDrop or iCloud clipboard.
Right. Yes. And this is the other problem with this, which is speaking as someone for whom currently iCloud clipboard just not working and who knows why. Hmm. This is one of those it just works features that has the potential to not work and be incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, I hope it does work. It's not in the beta yet, so we don't even know. That's not
that,
even in
that
there.
That has that problem, and that is also my worry about SharePlay, which I think is clever, but it is one of those things where, and I watched the sessions on it, and they seem to have spent a lot of time building that sort of synchronization stuff directly in like the low levels. But when it doesn't work, people are going to get angry because there is nothing more infuriating than technology that just works when it doesn't and you don't know how to fix it. And I think there's a lot of potential failure points there, including just like people have different quality connections. And hopefully everybody's got a good enough connection they can maintain a video call while streaming video or something. But when one person doesn't and the video starts skipping or buffering, that's going to be really annoying. So it's a super clever feature. And if it works, Lex and I do a show where we watch movies together.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, well, this would be great for that. But does it work?
Does it work?
Yeah. And do you get the buy-in from the partners? I mean, they've got a lot of partners lined up there, and that's great. They needed those because if they just walked out and said, and developers can start integrating it starting now, and they didn't have anybody who had sort of signed on to lead the way, then I think a lot of people would be like, we already made our feature.
A lot of those partners already have like Group Watch features, so they're basically like able to support Apple's API and connect it to their existing Group Watch work that they did. And that's actually a good sign of it's good for Apple to come late to something, because all the other ones are like browser extensions and stuff, or they're not that as good. This is like, this has the potential to be better. I want to mention Shortcuts.
Yeah.
On the Mac.
That's a win for me. That's a big old.
That's a big one. Yeah. They did everything. They almost did everything and more than I wanted. I didn't expect them to make the effort to provide Automator compatibility.
Yeah.
That is, by the way, the writing on the wall. I love the fact that they said this is a multi-year transition, because that actually makes it sound like they're committed to having a plan to figure out what automation across Apple's platforms is. That's great. The fact that they replicated Automator blocks so that they could import Automator actions so that they can ultimately replace Automator, I think that's amazing. What's funny, so I opened a bunch of those automator actions that I've got, and I discovered that most of them are irrelevant because of one of two things. One is it's just running a shell script, and you can run shell scripts inside the Shortcuts now on the Mac. And two, it's irrelevant because for the ones that I really wanted to use on my iPad, I built shortcut equivalents of those workflows on my iPad, which are more elegant than the command line hacks that I did on the Mac side, because I was basically making beautiful, well-built shortcuts on the iPad. And then on the Mac, I was like, well, I can fire off this shell script and I can do this in Apple script and I can munge it all together and figure it out. And so I think in a lot of these cases, I'll just not use the Automator anymore. I'll just use the shortcut from iOS, because I tried my Post to Six Color shortcut first thing from iOS, and it just worked. Like, it was kind of shocking. First time it worked. So pretty excited about that.
First time.
Pretty, yeah. Well, I mean, that, plus, exactly. Yeah.
Plus, they wrote it in Swift UI just for you.
Well, that's true. I did win. I ended up winning the draft in a controversial way because of
Jason,
that.
Brutal.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was. I sent Mike a gift basket as an apology afterward. But at the same time, I actually won. So, and in fact, the most controversial one was mail features, where I said, and there was one, and then somebody pointed out the next day, oh, no, actually there are two modern mail features in the mail app. I'm like, okay, well, there you go. I don't know what we were. It's good. It's Shortcuts on Mac.
Shortcuts,
it's good. It's
Shortcuts
built in,
is a win.
It's built in Swift UI. They actually have done another interface update in across, because it's cross-platform. So the interface is different in both places, but they're trying to make it better. You can kind of like fold things, and everything's a little more compact, and you can share things as files again, which is really good. So you don't have to go through iCloud, and the preferences for all of that stuff is a little bit better. And it's, you know, in the end, I think Shortcuts is a better gateway to user automation than the existing stuff on the Mac. And I actually think the Mac is a better place to do user automation than on the iPad. So I think it's a great match made in heaven. And I'm very, just kind of an enthusiastic thumbs up for that one.
Yeah. FaceTime features, not SharePlay notwithstanding, I think most of those are good. As you talked about, and we talked about, everybody's talked about, it would have been nice to have these a long time ago, but I'm still glad that the upgrades are being made. Most specifically, getting rid of nausea view, as I like to call it, is a huge plus. It's a small thing, and it took them a year to figure out how to put video in a grid, but
floating bubbles.
They did it.
Yeah, I wrote
Our national nightmare is over.
I wrote a Macworld piece that is basically, I'm glad Apple learned from what everybody was learning from Zoom and other apps, and said, why is that not in FaceTime? And put it in FaceTime. And they put their own spin on it, but that's basically what they learned. I think things like having links, having guests appear on other platforms.
Yeah.
And my question was like, is it too little too late? And my answer, following Betteridge's law of headlines, is no, I don't think it is, because although we may have reached, it's possible, you never know, we have reached like peak Zoom. I think that the experience of the last year has also changed us, and that people, and not just in a like cultural way, we could talk about like people working from home and stuff like that. I think it's changed in the sense that everybody's experienced these things when they might have resisted before, and that a certain amount of that is going to remain. And so Apple FaceTime got saddled with, I think FaceTime has actually been very successful at one-to-ones, but clearly what last year showed is that nobody thinks about FaceTime for group video, and Apple is falling behind there. So I think they did a good job of basically swallowing their pride and saying, oh yeah, we got it wrong. Let's do all those things that everyone else already does.
So adding all the portrait mode and the mic modes and all that stuff, I think that's all good. I think it's all stuff that just makes FaceTime better than it was before, and there's no downside to it.
Yeah, and having the standing meeting thing, like I will tell you that's what my family Zoom is we have a link that everybody's got, and you click the link and you start your meeting every other week when we do that. And that's powerful. And I know there are other ways to set up a group and to have it in a group chat that you kick into a FaceTime and all that, but I think it's powerful to be able to say, here's the link, put it in your calendar.
Do they show what it looks like on the Mac? Because I've often thought that the FaceTime app on the Mac is kind of crappy.
It's very weird. I haven't looked.
I hope that means there are some improvements on the Mac side as well, because again, we all use Zoom on here. And for a lot of the podcasting, we're using Zoom right now. Yes. I mean, and a lot of these things in theory could be accomplished by FaceTime. It doesn't have all of the niceties that Zoom has, but you know, it gets closer.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I'm ever going to use FaceTime for podcasting, but it could be used for all sorts of other things. The overall, the thing that struck me the most about Monday, especially, was that we have left what I said on the site was, I love it when a platform comes together. But like the idea there is that for a long time, it's felt like there are big new features on iOS, and then some of them trickle to the Mac partially, or not, and some of them don't at all. And that the Mac has some things, and those are just for the Mac. And what was funny about the keynote was almost all the features they announced were like across Mac, iPad, and iPhone, and in some cases TV, in some cases watch as well. But like when they got to the Mac, so many of the features for the Mac had already been announced, because they were features that are across all the platforms and had already been mentioned. And I think that's, to me, I feel like Apple's years of effort to get these platforms on the same base again and have these crossing platform technologies like Catalyst and SwiftUI have put Apple on this path to get to right here, which is they just roll these things out and they roll out everywhere. And that was has been their goal for like 5 years, 4 years at least. Mm-hmm, but it feels like they've mostly gotten there now.
Yeah, I agree. Oh, I will say the first image on the Monterey preview site has a picture of the FaceTime window. It does look better.
There you go.
So that's good.
Breaking FaceTime news.
Yeah, no, I do think it is key to have all those features everywhere. One of the other ones that jumped out at me that I thought was just one of those features that I know it's been done before, but it still feels bananas, is live text, which I think is just huge. I think that the implications of that, it is one of the more magical feeling things I think that we may experience. And again, it's not stuff that has never been done before. Google has done a lot of this, both in the Google app and obviously on Android. But it opens up so many possibilities for things ranging from accessibility, which is potentially really big, to just convenience. Like, you know, I was talking on Twitter at some point about like, I started taking pictures of all like the manuals and stuff I get with like new purchases. So if I want to look up, oh, you know, I just bought a new pan, like a frying pan. What were the cleaning instructions for that one again? Like I took a picture of it, and you know, because the camera's so good, I can easily like zoom in and read stuff. But now in theory, I could search all that text. Like that's cool. Like there's just so many possibilities of things that allows for now. I mean, copying stuff off images posted on Twitter, like to be able to search stuff or I don't know. It strikes me as one of those things that's just kind of like in my head, images were always images and text were always text. And oh, well, you can't get that text out of the image. It's an image, right? But no, we can. We know what text looks like. Now we figured that out. So that's a big machine learning win for Apple, and I feel like one that puts them closer to a lot of the stuff Google has done over the period of time. You know, translation being another angle that sort of connects with that, which is, you know, Google has had the thing for a long time where it's like you point your camera at stuff and it translates it. And I remember
word lens,
because when I was in Finland for a conference years ago, I remember going to an ice cream store and holding it up and translating stuff. And some of it made zero sense because translation is an imperfect.
Sure.
It's an art, not a science. So like I had ice cream flavors labeled like injection. I was like, I don't know what that is. It sounds terrifying, but it's cool.
We did that in a supermarket in Amsterdam where I downloaded the Dutch dictionary and used Google Translate, which is used to be Word Lens. And yes, it with varying degrees of accuracy, but still pretty amazing to be able to hold it
a sign
or a label on a piece of food or something and be like, oh, that's what that is.
Right.
And
exactly.
And it's so, yeah. I love that. That's the next step for this technology, by the way, is just translate the text in this image and have it just do it. But yeah, I was thinking about the accessibility implications here. You really ought to be able to, I assume this is going to be built into VoiceOver now that, if you have an image, in a Twitter client, let's say, you can basically say, tell me what this image says or what this image is of, right? Because that's one of the things that they did with the, they're expanding their kind of ML image analysis is that they're able to provide some more detail about like what's in an image and having the machine, like, again, you're supposed to alt text everything and describe everything and all of that, but people don't do it. And having the machine be able to do it, I've always said that Twitter ought to do text analysis of things posted to Twitter and automatically mark them that way. Because, come on, like, people post screenshots to Twitter all the time to make announcements. But, you know, with Apple doing this, Apple's going to be able to do that. So if you can't read a screenshot, it should be able to read it for you.
Yeah. Yep, absolutely, 100%. And they may, the fact that it can also do it for stuff too, right? It's got that visual lookup feature. My wife has always like wanted for years, she's like, oh, what I need is Shazam for trees, right? I want to point my phone at a tree and have it tell me what tree it is. And it's like, in theory, I think this can do that now because it can do it for flowers anyways. That was one of the things they showed off. But fascinating, or like where you can point at a dog and be like, what breed is this dog? I think a lot of dogs are going to come back with like a lot of different breeds probably. But it's clever and interesting. And again, a place where I think Google has long had a lead on Apple, and I don't want to entirely credit it to like, you know, one person, but certainly bringing over John Giandrea from Google to head up their AI stuff feels like this year was one of the years where they flipped a switch and brought in a lot of the AI ML stuff that they've been working on and made it more compelling to the user. Because as you pointed out, you could search for your photos library, right? And be like, show me pictures of dogs. And it's like,
right,
great. Like, that is handy, but to take it to a new level is even better.
So I have a photo, and this didn't work so well. I have a photo of a recipe card my mom wrote when, like, I was a kid that she found. I was like, do you have your recipe for your chocolate sauce for, like, it's like hot fudge for ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, I don't know. I said, well, I know you have it because one of the instructions is a scant cup of milk. And we always wondered, what is a scant cup of milk exactly? Anyway, she sent me a photo of it and I put it in notes. And I just found it and I tried to copy the text out of it. But it's handwritten on a kind of low contrast thing. Here's the recipe out there for everybody. One lup, 90 bop, fop, jafe, elaser, cocon, P, Conte, Scant Cat, Scant, see there, I told you, Scant Cat, Yeast Cam, Vel Feek, Lots, Clegg. So there, chocolate sauce, enjoy.
Nailed it. Well, it's, you know,
it's
what I say,
it's not a
Jason,
miracle worker. I could barely decipher it.
the best way to enjoy chocolate sauce is in the original Klingon.
Yeah, well, you know, just as long as you got your Scant Cat.
Your Jafe and your Scant Cat.
Scant Cat and Yeast Cam, then you're good.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, no, it's, yeah, you know, we never
it's
get everything.
Perfect.
We never get everything.
We never get everything.
I think there's a good collection of things here. I think also my sense in the background is that we are seeing one pandemic, like where this is entirely stuff that's a product or almost entirely, probably some of it dates from pre-pandemic actually, but almost entirely stuff from the pandemic time for Apple, like, whereas last year a lot of the work had been done before the pandemic. So I think that it's smaller. It's a smaller set of things than in previous years. They've also been pushing really hard with some new initiatives and maybe pushing hard with new initiatives soon, right? Like all the rumors about the AR headsets and stuff. But what the net result is, there's some nice stuff here. There's some very welcome improvements. There's probably Safari, some unwelcome improvements. But also what I've heard from a bunch of developers, the developers we know, is it's the first time in a while where there hasn't been this like must implement feature. And like James Thompson is a good example where if you've watched James Thompson, his strategy, other than to amuse himself with bananas and dice, is his strategy with pCalc especially is be among the first to adopt whatever new technologies Apple is coming out with. Be there on day one and be there on all the platforms, which is why there's a watch app of pCalc, right? Mm-hmm. And you look at this stuff, and I am not entirely sure, other than like shortcuts on the Mac, I'm not entirely sure whether there's anything here for him to do. And that
SharePlay, I guess?
Yeah, actually,
really make
he
sense,
said, actually, he said Dice by pCalc actually might be good with SharePlay because you could have a shared, although it would just be one person's Dice. I don't know. So I think that says something about how this is maybe a little bit more of an off year for Apple in a good way, because off year means it may be fix some bugs, make things a little bit better, make things a little bit more stable. Don't try to break things in order to bring in a new feature. And for our friends who are app developers, after the year plus that they have had, because we've all had a hard time, they may have a little bit of a break too. They may not have to scramble to do the latest and greatest thing for Apple this summer. And that's okay. Like, I'm not sure this pace is what Apple wants to do every year, but I think it's okay every now and then, right, to take a moment and what is the line that coaches say in sports? Play within yourself, right? Like, don't try to do too much. And that feels a little bit like what's going on here.
Right. Yeah. Well, there's interesting stuff. And I think there's a lot of stuff out also that is laying groundwork, as we said, for stuff coming way down the pipe, right? Like, not this year.
The AR.
But like, the AR stuff is incredible.
Could not have been clearer about what they're doing with AR. Right?
Object capture, right? Like, that thing is huge. That's huge for people building apps.
About like how they can detect like your bones by looking at your hands and stuff, where it's just all
please,
like,
no,
that's various
not
bones.
My bones.
Various bones. Well, the idea there is that they're doing, and honestly, the 3D, the SimCity-esque, super high, fine maps.
The maps, yeah.
Those are also struck me as being like with the 3D and the design of them. It's like that is stuff that could be potentially integrated into an AR experience.
It's not hard to see as maps being. I've long maintained that maps is one of the killer apps potentially for Apple when it rolls it out, because it's something that's entirely under its own control and it's something that's useful. Because if you can say, put on our glasses, you will never be lost again. that is huge.
And the level of detail. I mean, and I know that this is stuff that they all get from going around with cameras, but like in my neighborhood, because we have those new maps in my neighborhood, and like there's a path that we go on, and there's a path up to the long bike path from the street, and at that intersection, only a couple of years ago, there are two crosswalks, so it's not it's a T intersection, but there are not three crosswalks, there are two crosswalks. And in Apple's new fancy maps, you can see the stop sign, you can see the stripes, and you can see those two crosswalks. And it's like somebody made a cartoon-esque, or like The Sims is what I keep thinking, or SimCity, representation of the entire world, or at least of my part of the world. Like, it's really good, and I think it's actually kind of fun and I kind of love it, how it looks. And they randomly seed trees and stuff sometimes where there's like a bunch of trees. They'll just sort of like scatter some trees and all that. But I think it's really good. And yeah, it shows a lot of what we're seeing now is like, well, yeah, but also we've got some plans for this down the road, whether it's cars or AR or anything right. like that. It's right. there. Oh, right. A thing we've speculated on here that I wanted to mention at least is we talked about Apple's strategy for privacy and security on networks. And they yeah. did this iCloud yeah. private relay thing, which is interesting because we had talked about, like, could Apple turn iCloud into a VPN? And the answer yep. is Apple doesn't really want to handle that level of traffic, but they seem to be willing to handle anybody who's paying for iCloud and using Safari.
Right. I think actually what's interesting about this, and I having watched the session on it, I think the reason they chose Safari is it is by far the biggest, most vulnerable attack surface for this kind of thing.
Right.
Attack is a little extreme, but keep in mind, if you're using, you know, an app, your app is probably communicating with that app's servers, right? Your app is, if you're using Yelp, if you're using Lyft, you're talking to Yelp, you're talking to Lyft. They already have all that information. And I don't think Apple wants to be in the business of intermediating those sorts of connections because A, it's more traffic. B, it's kind of a losing ball game because yeah. Lyft is still going to know who you are. You're logged in, right? If you're using yeah. Lyft, you have already given them all this yeah. information. You can't really do anything
about
that.
Streaming Netflix doesn't need to be.
Doesn't matter, right? Like that information is going to be collected no matter what Apple does because Netflix controls both endpoints.
Yes.
So the Safari is the one that makes the most sense. The real losers here are the third-party browsers on iOS who don't get this feature. Although I believe somebody said web views, I think, are included in apps. It's not 100% clear to me, but somebody said that was the case. So it's given that web views are based on WebKit,
yeah,
on the same architecture probably, but the Chrome and Firefox and iOS, like, they're WebKit, but they're not Safari. So I don't think they will get that protection.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if they have there's a way to... Whether they
actually
use it or if they can't use it or if it's they yeah. can opt into using it.
I don't think in most cases there is actually a huge rationale for them to protect other traffic. I mean, everything else, stuff that's in other connections is encrypted on those sites, right? Like mail. There's no reason for them to do the mail thing because, again, you're communicating right. with your mail server and your mail server connection is encrypted.
I think I saw that also anything on port 80 is going to be routed through this.
Yes. So if anything
if you're
uses
doing any unsecure
unprotected
HTTP, yeah. it's going to go yes. through this.
And local traffic on your network obviously is not intermediated. Right. There is an open question that I'm not 100% sure about for stuff. If you have like an Eero that does content filtering, it's sort of on your network, but it's also sort of not on your network. So yeah. I don't know how that works. So because they were recommending the Screen Time API lets you do stuff for content filtering on device. That will all still function because it gets it before it goes right. out.
I heard
but
somebody
if you use a remote said, service.
Yeah, I heard somebody who was using like an ad blocker on their network yeah. and it just doesn't work
yes.
with this.
I think that may be a challenge,
yeah.
But I don't know. I don't know how that's going to play out. So there are some caveats, but I think on the whole it's a good solution and it's, you know, I think again to their point for everything aside from the people who use VPNs to get around geolocks, I think this solution is probably better. I don't know. I think the other question is, you know, Apple and whatever CDNs they're using to partner with, they're used to dealing with a ton of bandwidth. But the question is this interrupt? Does this run into problems? Does it make things slower? Because you got to go through extra hops now. I don't think that'll probably be huge in most cases, but I think there are cases where it might come into play. I don't know. The worry of like it's failure points, right? Like we saw this week when Fastly went down and screwed up a bunch of the web. If Apple's ingress server goes down,
blurred,
is everything breaks basically? Yeah. That seems not great, but I mean,
well,
it's
I hope
hopefully
they've learned their lesson and there's backups and then there's basically
sure.
a I'm gonna give up kind of
yes,
moment.
Yes, exactly. Like, I mean, you can also use it. This was an interesting point in the session if you're. If you're on a Wi-Fi network that requires traffic monitoring, as many enterprise or education-like networks do, right? They have to monitor all their traffic because that is a policy thing. Mm-hmm. You can essentially block access to Apple's private relay server, and it will tell you when you log onto that network. If you're enabled, it'll say, this network is not compatible with the private relay. Would you like to go ahead and use it anyway, or would you like to use a different network? So there is at least transparency of that, and hopefully that also means redundancy and fail, you know, failover situations where if that server is broken, it will just sort of fail into like your, let you know your connection is not currently being protected or something.
Right.
We will re-enable it when the server is back online rather than just blocking all of your traffic, which is going to really suck.
Fascinating stuff.
Yeah, lots of cool stuff. So I'm excited for a lot of those little things like that they're adding, which are not necessarily huge marquee features, but are things that I think will make life better. You know, generating two-factor codes, that's a huge one. Sure. All this, you know, stuff where it's like, this is just going to make certain things in my life easier. That is what technology is for, and I'm glad there's a lot of that in what they announced.
Right, and they're laying the groundwork. I talked about this last year with the app clips and car key. They did a car key update, which I mentioned last year is like, obviously they're going to use the U1 chip and do NFC car key stuff. And the NFC cars are going to start shipping this fall. And that's a much better experience, by the way, because NFC, you have to tap your phone on the lock, and then you have to lay your phone on the scanner inside the car in order to verify and that you can start the car. And with U1, it knows that the phone is in your pocket or wallet next to the door and will open the door. And it knows that your phone is inside the car and will let you start the car. So you don't have to do proximity like in the same way. And so it's a way better experience with way better security features. Anyway, they announced that. So that's another thing that's like, you know, by the time you personally, dear listener, buy a car that has car key in it, it will probably be on average 5-10 years from now. But it's there, and they're laying the groundwork. App clip, we mentioned this on Upgrade a few weeks ago, and we've heard from people like, there are app clips around. They're starting to roll out, but it was always going to be a long-term process. And, you know, and there's stuff like that. The passwordless future, right, that you wrote a story about. Like, all of the tech giants are working on a system that uses public key encryption in order to do identifiers that aren't passwords so that they're secure and password files can't be stolen, or they can be stolen and they don't do anything.
Because they're public. Yeah.
And that's going to take years, but it's going to happen.
And it's got challenges. I mentioned that to my wife last night. My wife works at a large agency, and she's like, well, what happens when our employees, many of whom don't have smartphones, need to log in on their computers? That's like, yeah, that's a problem.
That's why it's going to take years, because they're not going to do it until. But the thing is, Microsoft and Google and everybody is committed.
Everybody's
to this.
Behind it. Yep.
So
yep.
What'll happen is they'll just download the browser update, and now it supports it. And that's how it's going to be.
Right. It's a ripple thing, right? Like, there will be places that start to adopt it, and it will be an alternative, right? They'll say like, oh, instead of using your password on the site, if you like, you can use the pass keys instead. Yes. And it's like, oh, all right. And you'll slowly adopt that in the same way that we've seen, like, you know, federated sign-ons with sign-in with Apple or sign-in with Google or whatever. Like, they'll start to trickle out, and more sites will start to support them. And this is not even supported as a user-facing feature in this release. It's just a basically a developer preview. So it's not like it's coming this year. It's like it's coming in the next decade.
That's
good news.
Most interesting stuff that Apple does is when they announce something and say this isn't turned on and it's basically a preview, because they're like, they're putting it in there, but it's not ready for prime time, and they're just trying to lay the groundwork. But that's good. Like, that not everything has to be instant gratification, or even at the end of the summer gratification. Like, I like those features where it's clear. We're talking about the AR stuff where it's clear that Apple's got a story they're not telling yet, but also sometimes they tell the story and it's very much like, look, if we have to do something in the next 6 months, nothing will ever change, and so we worked on industry consortiums, which is also true where car key and for the passwordless logins, like that's all like industry groups that are working on something so that in a few years, as software updates and this all gets finalized, we'll end up in a better place than we're in now. Like car key is a great example of like, also NFC locks for home locks.
Well, and as you and I talked about a lot, Matter is also falls into that camp of something that they have worked with a big consortium about. And again,
it's going to take time.
There's stuff built into the system. It's not designed to be public facing right now.
Right.
But it is designed to be there so that people building apps and building accessories that work with this system can test and figure out how it will work.
And in the long run, every home accessory will be a Matter accessory. And the way Apple's built it is they're building a Matter layer alongside HomeKit.
HomeKit.
And
so
over time,
you won't even know.
You won't know, and it'll just work, and it'll be fine. But I am, as somebody with a smart lock, I'm very excited about the possibility that, and Apple mentioned, or at least on a slide, that the major partners that they're working on with that are the makers of all the major smart locks, essentially, including mine. And I'm hopeful that I'm actually going to be able to get like an NFC module for my lock. Replace the one that I've got now, which is like a Bluetooth module, because I think I've mentioned this before, but like that's the dream, is that I should be able to tap my watch to the door and have it unlock. That's what I want.
Yeah, when we finish our renovations, we will probably end up getting our locks all rekeyed just to like sort of have a reset there. And part of me is interested in getting a smart lock, but I'm not sure I can sell my wife on it.
Maybe
when the newer ones
we can talk about it. There's some real advantages to having a smart lock.
I believe it. Yeah.
Honestly, one of the big advantages is, you know, a smart lock will automatically lock the door when you walk away. So if you ever had that moment of like, did I lock the door? The answer is it doesn't matter. It's locked. And you can even open on your phone and see that it's locked if you really want to reassure yourself. But, it auto locks when you leave and when you come home. If you don't lock the door, it auto locks. And, you know, mine has a number pad so that you can get in and you can generate a code for somebody if you want to let somebody in for a day or whatever. Like there's all these nice things about it. Even if you don't use the smart features, it's kind of a nice idea. Yeah. So
we'll see. We'll see when that comes around.
But I'll tell you, if you could just tap your phone or your watch to your door and have it unlock, that's the thing that mine doesn't do. It's got to either do the Bluetooth proximity or you got to put in the code, and it's not quite as nice. It's nice not to have a lock, not to carry a key. I like that.
Gonna go old school, Jason. Just gonna get a butler. I think that's my plan.
Okay. Well,
they open the door.
Have
for
the
you.
Butler install the lock for you.
Ooh, there you go. Now that's synergy.
Yeah. All right. Well, big week. More to talk about this special bonus, extra long. I mean, it's WWDC. What do you think it's going to be? We talked a long time. There's a lot to talk about. We'll be back next week. We'll talk less next week. And until then, bye, Dan.
Bye, Jason.